Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
Today's episode of the For Love and Money podcast features Lucy Piper. Lucy is the director of Work for Climate, and she's a passionate voice for moving the needle on climate change. After a decade in the corporate sector working in advertising and film production, Lucy faced her own climate reckoning. As a new mother, hearing the voice of Greta Thunberg addressing the UN, "We will never forgive you," do you remember that? That echoed in her mind, and she decided to turn her own skills towards climate solutions. So in 2020, she left her much-loved role as the global head of creative at Intrepid Travel to join Work for Climate. Work for Climate is a nonprofit that equips climate-concerned professionals, which we should all be, with the education, resources, and community to make impactful change. Since then, Lucy has spent her days empowering Australians to push for change within their workplaces so that more businesses can set and achieve ambitious climate goals. Lucy believes that businesses are key to solving the climate crisis, and that employees are critical to its success. "You don't need to quit your day job in order to have a big impact on climate change," she says. Her team is helping build a green-collar workforce, and they're increasing practical climate literacy in every role and department. My interview with Lucy gave me such a boost of energy and excitement, and I really hope it flows through to you. It is exactly the kind of energy that you want to bring into the new year, although it's welcome at any time of the year, because it comes from a place of empowerment, a recognition that we all have a role to play in the climate crisis, and we can do something. And that something, no matter how small it is, can level up into something bigger. Work for Climate is an antidote to the philosophy that little old me can't do anything. Yes, you can. Yes, we all can. Enjoy this episode with Lucy Piper. I hope it inspires you to sign up to Work for Climate or to share this episode with others who can take action. Lucy, welcome to the For Love and the Money podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Carolyn. I'm very excited to have a chat.
Me too. We've both just come off the two-day purpose conference. We're recording this in November 2023, and we've just had a great chat beforehand, both very, very inspired. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation and letting our listeners understand what you're doing at Work for Climate. But before we get into it, when you think about business, when you think about purpose in business, do you think love has a role to play?
I think this is one of the reasons I'm a big fan of your work. It really resonates with me, the idea, the concept that love, like a deep love, in your words, for humanity, is kind of at the core of how I think about everything, in like interpersonal connections and relationships, but also in everything in business and work as well. I believe that the way that we achieve things is always relational, and love is that fabric. So that's how I think about love in terms of my work and the change and impact that I'd love to have in the world.
And I can see it coming through when I've been researching your background and your trajectory. You can see that you've been inspired by love, passion, you know. So I'd love you to share with our listeners your background story, you know, how you came to be where you are today with Work for Climate.
Okay, so I started out my career a long time ago working in the film industry. I was obsessed with cameras, film cameras, photography, cinematography, and worked as a camera trainee and a clapper loader back in the days when movies were shot on 35 mil film and 16
mil. Surely you're not that old, Lucy.
Well, I, so funnily enough, like I am, I think it's classified as a geriatric millennial in that pocket of people born at the start of the 80s. And I think that a theme that has kind of come throughout my life is being on that, like, one foot in two camps of, like, analog, digital, being a child before 9/11, and then that happening when I was 18, 19 years old, and then adulthood being in a very different context, or kind of pre-social media, post-social media. Like, I really resonate with this idea of people who are kind of in their early 40s who have experienced these two worlds in one. And I'm going off on a tangent here a little bit, but I think often about that quote that Barack Obama said years ago now, which is that we're the first generation who will feel the impacts of climate change, and we are the last generation who will be able to do anything about it before it's too late. So that concept of old world, new world, like having a foot in two camps, and taking it back to like where I started my career, was I put all of my efforts into learning this technology, this skill, this craft, which was camera technology, film camera technology. Being a clapper loader, I used to work on film sets, doing the clapper board and loading the film into magazines in the darkroom and that kind of thing. Up to a point where it was around about 2004, 5, 6, 7, when digital technology transformed the film industry, and all of my efforts, it felt like it became an antiquated skill set overnight, which is it's an interesting experience to have. And
how did you feel?
I think there was probably like a sense of resentment and loss for a little while when you have to learn this whole new thing, which is the digital world. And I think many people in many different industries experience that regardless of what they're doing. And I think the conversation we're in right now around AI and how people bring that into their craft to utilize it as a tool versus ignoring AI and what the future is going to hold for their careers. I think like it's a live conversation and will continue throughout the rest of time because it's about technology. But yeah, so I think I felt I felt flat by it, and it's probably only on reflection that I look back at my career and go, oh, maybe I had like a career, I turned a corner, I changed directions. I didn't think at the time it was because of the technology thing, but on reflection, maybe that was part and parcel of why I moved out of the film industry. And I started working in advertising. I moved to Australia from the UK and I did something called Award School, which given your background, you would be familiar with. But for your listeners, Award School in Australia and New Zealand is the art directors and copywriters kind of creative training. And so I did Award School. I worked in advertising.
And can I just say as well, it is intense. I didn't go through it, but I had people in my company who did. And, you know, it is a high bar and it's an intense experience, I believe, a rewarding one, but intense.
It was amazing. And I think back to it as one of my favorite experiences that I ever went through that pushes your thinking. And they talk about it and it was years ago that I did Award School. But they talk about it, they talked about it at the time as being, this is not just about making ads, this is about how you think. Award School really challenges your thinking and pushes you to generate novel ideas about things and just go beyond that first, second, third idea. And it really has formed the foundation of how I try to problem solve in whatever line of work that I'm in. It was never just about creating ads. But anyway, I worked in advertising for a few years, and then I applied for a job at a company called Intrepid Travel, who some of your Australian listeners will probably be familiar with, but it's an adventure travel company. And I started there on a contract and ended up working for 10 years, almost 10 years, inside Intrepid, and really grew up there.
What a wonderful company to grow up in.
Absolutely. Like, still feels like family today. And when you talk about love, I have nothing but love for the people, the ethos, the purpose of Intrepid. And it was there that I really learned that businesses can put purpose and values at the core of what they're doing. They can derive profit, but they can also drive change. And it was also a place where I was lucky enough to be held so that I felt safe and able to take risks, try new things, was able to build an internal creative department inside of a client organization, which is quite common now, but in 2010, 2012, 2014, that was a new thing. And for the leadership of that organization to give us a mandate and say, okay, go out and make branded video content at a time when that was something that would generally be outsourced, to be given the mandate, the budget, and free rein to go out and try new things and figure out what storytelling for a brand could look like inside of Intrepid, and was able to build like a really creative, thriving team internally and create work that I am more proud of in my life than anything else. Like, it was a true gift. And so that was where I spent, like I say, 10 years of my career.
And you worked your way up, didn't you? You worked your way up from doing content all the way up to global head of brand, head of creative.
Head of creative. So reporting into the global head of brand at the time. And yeah, I think that speaks to the culture of growth. They genuinely care about personal and professional growth and development. And my experience of working in Intrepid was that I worked for leaders who cared about me and cared that I was thriving and that I was growing and were prepared to back me to level up in my career. And they have some brilliant, I would say, like, best in class management development programs internally. So yeah, I owe them everything. And as you can tell, I will often speak highly of Intrepid when I'm talking to people like yourself, Carolyn.
So, and yeah, you're talking to the converted about them.
Yeah, I know. And they're hearing about your travels and where you're going. As soon as we started talking about that before, I'm not sure if you noticed, but I completely lit up. And
yes, absolutely. Thinking, yeah,
tell me, where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm absolutely. Like, so I should probably fill in our listeners. So I speak about Intrepid a lot when I do speaking, as examples when I'm working with clients, and yet I've never been on an Intrepid tour, and I am about to go on an Intrepid tour to Morocco, hiking, biking and camel riding in early December. So that's the background anyway.
You're going to love it. It's, yeah, you're going to have the time of your life.
Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, from Intrepid. So that I left Intrepid in 2020 because I had been feeling this kind of deep, like, nudge or pull around climate. I'd been working on purpose-led initiatives at Intrepid for some time, and it was starting to crystallize for me that climate change was something that I wanted to apply my thinking to and my time and my resources, and had been thinking about all the people in the world who are in creative industries or in marketing and the digital space, and what we're all doing is thinking about how do you get people to click on ads to buy stuff, and what if we could use our smarts to solving this challenge. So that was kind of muddled around in my brain. There were things happening in the world, like 2019 in Australia was obviously when we had the catastrophic bushfires, and it was extremely confronting, and that happened at the same time. Like, I'd recently become a parent for the first time towards the end of 2018, so having a young child, the fear, this visceral fear of the bushfires being around us. And Greta Thunberg had given her inaugural speech at the UN, and to see a child with the courage to speak on a global stage, speaking truth to power, the alchemy of her words and her courage in this environment of the bushfires, which were raging for months, you kind of forget, you forget how big and scary that period of time was. It was terrifying. And then being a new parent as well, which on its own is terrifying. Just becoming a parent is terrifying. And then you put that all together and you put it like under this oppressive umbrella of global warming and what that means. I felt like I had no alternative but to apply my thinking to climate and this moment in time. And so I left Intrepid to join an organization called Work for Climate. And we are a not-for-profit and we are purely focused on accelerating the corporate transition to net zero, to a clean energy future, to winding down fossil fuels. But we do it by harnessing the energy and the skills of employees on the inside of corporations. So that's kind of where I've landed. And sometimes people ask me, oh, what does it feel like to be working on your passion? Like, you're so lucky you get to work on something you're passionate about. And I've talked about this a lot with the team that I work with and with other people in conversations like this. I'm not passionate about climate change. Like, I wish I didn't have to work on climate change. Mm. And I wish I could be making films about stories out in the world that are to do with things that I am passionate about. But I am feeling desperate. And that is why I'm here doing this work.
Lucy, thank you for sharing that with us. You know, when you talk about that period of 2019, I know how that makes me feel remembering that time. You talk about it being terrifying. It was also heartbreaking, right? I remember running a workshop for a company in Melbourne and I'd flown from Sydney and I'd look down and you could see the bushfires burning, right? And it was just so confronting. And I kicked off the workshop by sharing a video that I've shown hundreds of times. We the people, you know, the UN Global Goals video. And it's a really inspiring, emotive video. But when it finished, I went to speak and I lost it, you know, and there were about 20 people in the workshop and I saw some of them crying and it's like, far out, this is real. And I guess the reason I want to go back to that and what you talked about then is you said, I felt I had no alternative. And, you know, I think there would have been a lot of people who felt terrified, devastated, and wanting to do something. And I imagine out of that time, a lot of people did. But there are people listening to this podcast who feel like that as well, like they want to do something more. They got to pay their bills. They got to do all of this, and this is where, you know, Work for Climate comes in as a really empowering tool. But I want to ask you, why for you was there no option but to do something?
That's a great question, and I reflect often on that because I am experiencing the same things as everybody else in this kind of economy right now. Things like the cost of living crisis, things like how am I going to pay my mortgage month on month? Like being someone who is like I say, geriatric millennial, lucky enough to have like just scraped in and been able to buy a home. And then we're in this world of like cost of living crisis and how long a interest rate rise is going to continue and thinking about like doing purpose-led work versus the alternative, which is, oh, go work a corporate job where problems like that are going to be somewhat diminished compared to being in purpose-led space. Like these are real challenges for me as well. And I think that it was a catalytic moment where all of these different ingredients came together and forced my hand. That was why I felt I had no alternative. And I don't think it is a pathway for everyone. I think that the privileges that I've had in life that have allowed me to have a sense of courage and a sense of security are things that I lean on in order to take that leap in my work. And that is not available to everyone. I think it was a moment. Yeah. And what I'm trying to figure out is knowing that this is not possible for everyone. We can't have everyone quit their jobs and work on climate change. We've got to live in the real world. We need hospitals to function. We need food and services and education. We need society to function. We can't have everyone quit their jobs to go and work in a climate-focused NGO. I live in the real world. But what we do need to figure out is how we can mobilize the people that are not frontline workers, that are not healthcare workers, that are not providing the services that support the basic functioning of a healthy society. How do we help all of the other people who are working inside corporate structures? How do we help those people to slightly shift their paradigm that they operate within so that they can align their goals and their thinking with solving this wicked problem? You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to go and lead a climate-focused NGO. You can be a marketing director inside of a pharmaceutical company or an FMCG organization or a software company, but you can become what we're terming as green collar workers. Like, you can be thinking about, okay, what will it take for my organization that I work inside of? What will it take for us to slightly move from being contributing to the problem to contributing to the solution? We haven't figured it out yet, but you know, we're getting there. That's the problem that we're thinking about.
That's brilliant. And what I love about that is you're empowering people, right? It's such a positive message. And another guest a few episodes ago was talking on this podcast about how she believed the biggest threat to our society is cynicism. And, you know, cynicism, I guess, comes from distrust, but it's also you just don't believe that anything will make a difference. And, you know, going back to you and what you've done, it's a belief that you can make a difference. But what you're doing with Work for Climate is everyone can make a difference. You know, it doesn't always take, as you said, you don't have to leave your job. Everyone can make a difference in many, many different ways.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025.
I'd love you to share a little bit more in depth about Work for Climate and what people can do. Is there a story? Is there an example of, you know, some people who have been using your courses to create that change that you can share?
Sure. I'll definitely share some stories. And before I do, I'll just pull on that thread of what you said about cynicism and people feeling like they can't make a difference. And I think that there was a concept that was raised at the Purpose Conference actually yesterday, and this idea of there's like a Venn diagram, and on the left-hand side circle, it's all about mitigation, like climate mitigation. How can we prevent the most catastrophic elements of climate change from happening? Mitigation on the one side of the Venn diagram, and then on the other side of the Venn diagram is adaptation. It's the fact that this is locked in now. It's too late to prevent everything from happening because we have locked in a level of impact because we've been unable to keep temperatures below 1.3, 1.2, and it's going to go beyond 1.5. Hopefully we'll bring it back, but it means that elements of climate change impacts are locked in and we will have to think about adaptation. But adaptation is one side of that Venn diagram. Mitigation is the other side of that Venn diagram. And the idea of where they cross over in the middle is representative of this moment in time that we are in right now, where we can still mitigate for the worst impacts whilst thinking about the things that we need to be developing in terms of adaptation right now. And I'm trying to think of the name of the researcher and architect who presented that idea, Digby...
Hall, was it Hall?
Yeah, potentially Digby Hall.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can put that in the show notes.
I'll put it in the show notes, yes.
But I thought that that was a very elegant description of where we're at. And the work of Work for Climate, it resonated with me because we talk to employees inside corporations. So yes, we provide tools, resources, and help for all kinds of professionals in small, medium, and large businesses, but our real focus, our mission is directed at corporations. The biggest corporations on earth as well. The reason being that corporations have the power to rapidly mobilize resources, money. Everything happens because of, due to corporate action or inaction. So we are trying to take this moment in time where we need to mitigate and adapt. And we want to move corporations as rapidly as possible. They're also responsible for shaping policy around the world. And we look at, if we look at Australia, like it's corporate pressure, corporate interests, corporate capture that shapes whoever is in government of the day. It does not matter whether it is a party of the right, of the left, of the center. It is corporations that control what happens in Australia. And corporations have influences and pressure on their decision-making, and employees are like, they're powerful stakeholders, even though at an individual level, you don't necessarily recognize that as an employee, you have power. You do. Without employees, companies have nothing. They can't provide services. They cannot produce and sell products. So what employees are saying, what employees are asking for, that is a really critical part of how corporations are able to operate. So what we do at Work for Climate is we provide employees inside of corporations with the specific asks, the roadmap that this is what is required of corporate Australia. We operate globally, but I'll just talk about this in the Australian context for now. Like, we have specific goals that we need companies to be aligning to be reordering their business to align with, if we are going to stand any chance of mitigating the worst impacts of climate change. And our goals are in specific areas. We have renewable energy. So like the first thing that we help employees pitch for, essentially, we help them build business cases and influence internally. The first is around renewable energy. So get your company to switch to 100% renewable energy, because supply and demand, long-term supply and demand of fossil fuels is the short-term indicator of whether or not we are going to come close to staying within our carbon budget. Switching to 100% renewable energy, clean energy is the key to that kind of first goal. Beyond that, the next step is getting the organization to have a science-aligned net zero target. An ambitious net zero target. And this is not to do with wishy-washy carbon neutrality claims. This is not about buying offsets. This is not about accounting for your carbon. It is about real emissions reduction. Like, how do we actually stop producing carbon, emitting it into the atmosphere? So we provide tools and resources for employees, regardless of their background. They can be sustainability professionals. They can have expert technical background, and then we will help them level up their influencing, internal organizing, leadership skills to be able to get the, to be able to mobilize the broader workforce around those goals. Or it can be professionals, like I say, they can be from sales or product or marketing and not necessarily have those technical skills, but maybe they're really good at getting up internal projects or leading initiatives. Will help them with the technical side of those business cases and give them the roadmap for presenting and influencing that business case internally around your emissions reduction target. So our first area is renewable energy. Our second is emissions reduction. The next is money, financed emissions. What is your organization doing with its corporate cash? Where are its investments held? Are they investing in fossil fuel expansion, deforestation? Or are they invested in ethical products, in the clean energy transition? Where is your default superannuation fund? There is over $3 trillion worth of default superannuation funds in Australia. It is one of the biggest buckets of money on the planet, which is hands-off, barely managed by, like, the individuals who are paying into those super funds are saying, I'll go with the default employer fund. An employer, a corporation, can then choose to have their default superannuation fund invested in the solutions, the things that are actually going to help us mitigate the worst impacts of
massive opportunity.
It's a huge opportunity. So we help finance professionals to advocate for, to do their internal research around where their company's corporate cash, default super, is held, and then switch those investments. What does that look like? Does it look like taking it to the board? Does it look like having a conversation with the CFO and CEO? Like, it has different pathways depending on the size of the company, but we help employees figure out where they're at and what it will take to change that. So financed emissions, so energy, emissions, money, lobbying and advocacy. So do you work for a big corporation like big tech, for example? Or does your company have industry, like trade association memberships, where they could be using their voice to pressure the government for the policies that we need in place to create a regulatory environment that is going to set us up for climate action as opposed to climate inaction? And how do you know? What does that look like? As an individual employee, what does it look like to have conversations with your company about their lobbying efforts? We have some great examples of some of our community employee members working with our team on things like advocating internally, and this was earlier this year, around the safeguard mechanism in Australia. Or when when the government are asking for submissions from industry or from the public, are you organizing internally in your company to get your company to be submitting? So there's a bunch of stuff that we advocate for in that lobbying space. And then the final area, we call it Scope X. And Scope X includes things like advertised emissions. Who are the clients that you're working with? Do you work for a knowledge-based organization, a law firm, an auditing, accounting, professional services, management consultancy, communications, PR, advertising? What emissions are you enabling? Who are the clients that you're working with? There's an organization in the UK called Purpose Disruptors, and they've created a framework around advertised emissions. And they also have a quote, which I really love, that is basically, Like if you're working, say, in an advertising company, which is like, that's where I come from, so this really resonates with me, but look at the clients you're working with and think, if I'm the better I am at my job, is it actively fueling the climate crisis? Like, are you doing ads for a car company, for example? Are you trying to sell more internal combustion engines? Is that what you're putting your brain to? And if you are, here's some ways that you can speak up internally and pressure your organization around the clients that you're taking on board, that you're working with, because we need to be minimizing how much we're enabling the expansion of the fossil fuel industry. Like that is where we were talking before about empowerment as an individual. You have the power to say, if you work in an advertising agency or in an auditing firm, you may not feel like you have the power, but there are stories, if you look for them, of the individuals who have the courage to say internally, look, I'm not okay with the status quo. I don't think that this is okay that we're doing this way. And perhaps there's an alternative for us as an organization. Perhaps there's a different pathway for us. We don't have to be starting internal revolutions. There are ways that you can influence your organization and you can build your allies and you can build that internal collaborative network in a way that speaks to the leadership of your organization and makes them realize that they're not going to be able to continue to service those kind of clients into the future and attract and retain the best talent. And that talent pipeline, if you are a knowledge-based organization, that's what your business is. Your business is talent. So, I went off on a total tangent there. To bring it back to stories, examples of people in the Work for Climate community who are making these changes. We're actually about to launch a couple of stories in a campaign in the new year around the concept of this is that you basically, like, you hear all these stories of what climate activism is. And we want to say that you don't have to super glue your hands to a Monet to be a climate activist. And climate activism can look like many different things. And for us, climate activism looks like a professional inside of a manufacturing organization who was able to switch their global operations to 100% renewable energy. So we have like multiple examples of individuals making that change. And we also have, I was talking to someone yesterday at the Purpose Conference who went through our academy program, and they were telling us that they asked their CEO about default superannuation, and they work for a very progressive environmental organization who are obviously ticking all the boxes in terms of renewable energy and emissions reduction and are proactively facilitating emissions reduction for big corporate clients, but then in their own house had not considered the potential for their own impact in terms of their corporate cash and their default superannuation. And they've just switched their default superannuation to an ethical fund. And so hearing that story from someone within Brilliant. The climate community is just like a signal, an indicator that this stuff works. People can be making these changes.
I love this. And the other thing it shows is there are so many levers as well. And I love that you are providing such a comprehensive support mechanism to people, because so many people, I mean, how often do you hear people saying, oh, I really want to do something, but I don't know how. And what you're doing is giving them the how. And I love how you're doing it in such a comprehensive way, you know, not just with the technical skills around climate change, but helping them and supporting them with the leadership skills, the pitching skills, the conversation skills, and encouraging them to find their allies. And it's just such a powerful thing that you're doing. I absolutely love it. And as you're talking, I'm like, okay, I'm going to introduce them to these people and these people and these people. And The other thing that I want to highlight, Lucy, is the power of one. You know, I talk about this a bit. There's a chapter in my book at the end, The Power of One, and I share a story of a young woman in a company who I had a coffee with, and she'd read my first book, and she was like, she was a junior marketing, and she was like, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. And I just said, well, what do you see? And she said, I see an extraordinary amount of food waste. And I said, well, what might be a small step you could take? And she said, well, I could get Food Bank to come in, but, you know, I just don't know if it's enough to warrant them to come in. And I said, why don't you just start small, and why don't you start having conversations with people? Because I bet you there will be others who share your passion. And this client, who is a wholesaler distributor to cafes and to the big supermarkets, who became a client of mine because of the work she did, it started small, and now they've got this huge partnership with Food Bank. They're doing so much more with them. They're providing tons of food, not just waste, they're actually baking food for Food Bank recipients. And they've got a whole program, and it's really accelerated their journey to look at, you know, environmental things that they can do as well. One person, one junior person, the power of one. And, you know, if you are not a climate activist, then you're a climate pacifist. Passivist, not pacifist, pacifist. You're either doing something or you're doing nothing. And, you know, I have no doubt that there are so many people who want to do something. And I love, Lucy, that work for climate are giving them the how of how to do it. It's brilliant. Love it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I did. We have talked in the past about, like, there is so much information available in the world. Like, you could sit and read about climate change until the end of time and just absorb knowledge. But there's a massive action gap, an ambition gap between learning about the problem and the solutions and actually taking action, like the doing part. And what we've tried to develop at Work for Climate is a comprehensive guide to the how, with 360 degree entry points in for anyone, regardless of your job. Like, there is a way into this work. And I love what you said then about being passive. You're either active or you're passive. You're an activist or you're a pacifist. I love that. And I think that we are at a point, it is almost 2024, the window is closing, that if you are not doing something, you're a bystander. And that is not a good thing. And we need to, every single one of us, be figuring out, like you say, what is the smallest first step that I can be taking? And you don't need to know everything. I'm very guilty of knowing nothing and doing way too much, or being very ambitious about what I'm prepared to do with very little knowledge, because I just feel the urgency of this moment. And I just know I don't have time to go and do a master's in environmental sustainability, climate change. Like, there are climate science experts out there. I don't need to be an expert. I need to take what I'm already an expert in, which is making, doing, persuasion, getting people to take action. That's what I'm an expert in. And I just need to overlay that with what is the problem that we're trying to solve, put those two together. And so that's what we really want to bring people into our community and show them what the most relevant first step for them might be, and then help them on that pathway.
That is the definition of leadership, right? You've talked about old world, new world earlier in this podcast. And when you talked about that Venn diagram as well, you know, and mitigation and adaptation, we're at the center. That seems to me reinforcing that theme of old world, new world. And in the new world, you can't go to university really to study things that the new world needs. We need leaders to step up and use the skills we already have and use the knowledge of what we see happening to actually figure out what we can do now, today. And that for me is the absolute definition of leadership. You don't need a C in front of your title to be a leader. Mm. You know, that young woman I talked about is a leader. You know, she led what happened, and the people who work for climate serving are leaders, true leaders.
100%.
That's the opportunity. So I absolutely love it. So what do you hope for work for climate? Like, I'm not even going to say 5 years from now, because it's just 3 years from now. What is your dream for what you could achieve through work for climate?
Such a good question. Thank you for asking. The dream is that we really build this thriving community. So we've spent the past couple of years building, testing, refining the tools and the information and figuring out, like, does this stuff actually work? Do the playbooks work? Does the academy course that we've built, like, is it helpful? Does it work? And we've learned that it does. People are not only changing their companies, but they're also changing their lives and their professions from having gone through our program. So yes, it works. So the goal for us now is to grow the community, because it's the people that will do the work and help each other and learn from each other, and the growth becomes exponential. So we just want to build this thriving community, this hub of professionals who are learning from each other. They're kind of cross-pollinating ideas and knowledge across industries, across sectors, across companies, and accelerating what is possible for the corporate sector globally, not just in Australia, but in the next couple of years. We really want to be building that community and bringing them together in spaces, in events, online, so that this really is a movement of employee-led change, where we utilize this phrase from one of our partners, Project Drawdown, which is that every job should be a climate job. That is the world that we want to be building. Every job is a climate job. We have this green collar workforce where no matter what your role or your function is, the first thing that you are thinking about strategically is, how is this solving the problem? That's the world that we're trying to build. So I would love to see some of your listeners in the community. It's free to join.
How do they join the community? What's the next step? For our listeners,
the next step is head to workforclimate.org and check out the resources, the tools. We have free access to the Work for Climate Academy taster. So you can either enter the community through the Work for Climate Academy free taster course, or you can just click on the community link at the top of workforclimate.org and sign up there and introduce yourself on the platform and get started.
Get started. Get active. What did you say? If you're not doing something, you're a bystander. Yeah. And, you know, not just our listeners, but the people you know, your networks, you know, if you can share this episode with somebody else and get them active, all the better. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us. I have absolutely loved our conversation. I knew I would. I love what you're doing. And I can't wait to introduce you to some of my connections. I'm going to throw to you for any last comments and to close us out.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a delight. And I feel like there's been a lot of things from your work and your world that resonate deeply with me and with the work that we're trying to build in the world as well. And I especially admire the concept of putting love at the heart of things. It really resonates deeply. But thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?